flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Looking for a new home should be exciting, not frustrating. That's why Homes.com might just be the best home shopping site out there. Imagine searching for your dream home without ads cluttering your view. Homes.com's sleek, beautifully designed, ad-free interface makes your search simple and distraction-free. And if you're a parent, you know how important school information is. Homes.com gets it. They're the only site with detailed school and district info from multiple sources, including reviews from Niche. Plus, they've got a super comprehensive and transparent agent directory, making it easy to find the right expert to guide your journey. Oh, and here's a game changer. Homes.com always connects you directly with a listing agent who knows the home best. They even go beyond the basics, offering the most in-depth neighborhood content of any home shopping site, packed with details to help you find a community that feels like home. And the search tools? Unmatched. With 22 data visualization layers, 7 environmental layers, and filters for commute times and architectural styles, Homes.com truly is the home search you've been searching for. Go to Homes.com. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
What is Dax, are you?
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Yeah, you know, perspective over what, 29 seasons, and we've had 27 seasons like this, I think my math is right. But I'm very proud of the team this year. It was a successful season. I'm not going to sit up here and say it was not a successful season. It was in just about every way of looking at it, but I'm disappointed, and John's disappointed. We're all disappointed. Our team's disappointed. You know, we had higher aspirations, and we didn't achieve those aspirations and goals, but I think it was a successful season. I'm very proud of the team, the players, the coaches, support staff, everybody, and I've already moved on. I've started watching tape. I'm immersed in college and pro scouting right now and talking about contracts and negotiations and different things. And that's one, I think for me, that's one of the blessings of my job is it's very seasonal. And I'm in now one of my most favorite seasons.
So that was Eric DeCosta yesterday. He says the season was a success. The Ravens won 12 games in the regular season, won the division, won a playoff game, but out in the divisional round, losing to the Buffalo Bills in Buffalo on Sunday. So I asked guys, and start with you, Jason, now, how would you grade this season?
It's another in a continuation of seasons that didn't meet their end goal, didn't come as close to the end goal as I think anybody would have liked, but that connoted and signaled some significant progress. Now, until that progress bleeds over into more playoff wins, we're all just, what do they say? A tie is like kissing your sister. We're all just, it's one big circle, you know what, right? Until it becomes truly advanced and pushing forward. But like Zach Orr, he had about 3 seasons in one. Like Zach Orr is going to come into next year much more hardened, calloused, and like he went through some stuff. Offensively, they continued to evolve. They continued to set records. Lamar played the best football of his life. I feel like the arrow is pointed up on more young offensive players for this franchise than a lot, like maybe ever. I mean, I don't know, maybe ever before. We'd have to really sit down and think about it. Mm-hmm. But there were positive signs galore that year two of Monk brought even more contributors to the table. But defensively, they were a mess and they became a triage unit and they saved the season. But that's been happening too often. So, like, even that, been there, done that. Horrible defense first half, great defense second half. Like, you've seen that. Not enough playmakers showing up on defense in the playoffs. We've seen that. Undermining yourself in the playoffs, you've certainly seen that. So, like, it was a very solid season. Like, you want to grade it? You could convince me to go as high as a B+. Because the offensive gains, I think, that's what makes it from a B to a B+, is the fact that they got Lamar to even another level, and Zay went to another level, and Bateman went to another level. I think likely could go to another level if you reshuffle the deck there. Derrick Henry took it to a level that I don't think anybody could have expected. The young offensive lineman got better as the season went on. So you could sway me to a B+ there, but it wasn't good enough that I think status quo will be okay. If you bring back all these coaches, you run the risk that you start off with some of the same BS that you've had before. If you just pay lip service to your special teams issues but don't really address them, they might come back to bite you in some games that cost you the difference between, you know, one more home game in the playoffs and not. If you just bank on everyone's going to just keep getting better and better and better, and you do it like the Orioles did it, you're going to keep running into the same end game. But, I mean, it wasn't a lost season. It wasn't a wash. It wasn't a bad season. It just wasn't great enough.
No, it certainly wasn't a failure. I don't think that you can give it an A when you have the type of expectations that you have associated with this franchise, with this quarterback. But a lot of good happened this season, and I think you need to give the coaching staff, the players, personnel department a ton of credit in the fact that their roster and coaching staff was completely in flux from the end of the AFC Championship through the beginning part of the offseason. There was a ton of brain drain where it wasn't just losing a Mike McDonald. You lost a Denard Wilson. You lost an Anthony Weaver who went to become defensive coordinators. You lost a ton of starters and impact players on that 2023 team, and you had to do it differently this year. You got off to a horrible 0-2 start and were able to dig yourself out of that hole. There were a ton of really fun games. This offense did historic things. First offense ever, 4,000 yards passing, 3,000 yards rushing. Lamar Jackson set to win a third MVP, back-to-back MVPs. Derrick Henry, no one could have envisioned the type of season that he had. The offensive line did get better. The defense did hit its stride after the first 10 weeks of the season. But all that being said, it's not good enough. I think Eric DaCosta said it right, where this is not a failure, but it's a disappointment. There's disappointment that you weren't able to get back to the AFC Championship. There's disappointment that you weren't able to take advantage of all of the things that I just said, you just said, Jason, in a really good year, and you flame out earlier than you expect.
I'm torn because we spent so much time talking during the season about nothing else matters but the postseason at this point with this team, because Lamar Jackson has proven that he's a two-time coming into this year. He's a two-time MVP. He's great in the regular season. And then it all comes down to the postseason. There's the other variable here that you can make the argument that they beat themselves in every single game they lost. Like, this is who they are. We talked about it during the season, Jason, that we foresaw...
Low football IQ.
Yeah, we foresaw ourselves coming in on a Monday after a loss and saying, well, they beat themselves. And that's exactly what they did. I probably landed a B because they did win the division, but
here for me is where it's different. How many points do they score in the playoff games despite the issues? My whole thing with them is, when's the playoffs going to look like the regular season on the offensive side of the ball? It did. They averaged 27 points per game with Lamar in the regular season. If Andrews catches the ball, it's 27. Yeah. I mean, they averaged 7.3 yards per play on a frigid night in Buffalo when Zay Flowers didn't play and Mark Andrews decided not to show up for the game and Derrick Henry spent a lot of time on the bench because of game flow. And they still, we all think, should have won the game. That we can't say before. Right? Like, you could not say, like, these to me, for me, these are Lamar's two best playoff performances.
Yeah.
Oh, that sure. takes it yeah. to another level for me.
And what he did in the second half.
And who he did it with.
Yes.
And who he did it against. So, like, I can't sit here and say this is just like last year. Like, I think a lot of people, including Todd Monken, yeah. as much as their mistakes he definitely made in Buffalo, I feel like people learned from their scars last year and are better for it, but that's still a consolation prize.
That's where I was. Everything you're saying is right. Where we saw the first vintage four-quarter Lamar Jackson performance against the Steelers wild card weekend. He had a really good second half against Buffalo, but we're beyond moral victories at this point.
The object is to win.
It's great that they did better, and you're starting to change that narrative. I'm with you, but I can't, you know?
Yeah, I saw Bill Belichick on a podcast just fiddling around earlier, and he's like, the Ravens, I thought, were the best team in football, but all they do is beat themselves.
Well, I think the three best teams in football are Baltimore, Buffalo, and Kansas City. Only one of them can make it to the Super Bowl.
Yeah. Yeah.
The NFC's a joke. Come on. The NFC East won NFC North won a lot of regular season games. The West sucked. The East sucked. South always sucks.
Yeah.
Yeah. We put out a poll for this question. It's brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings. It is Boneless Thursday. Buy one, get one bonus boneless wings. Can't stop in. Order Buffalo Wild Wings. Go and pick it up on your way home or for your next event. So, Ravens flock, you've had time to digest another Ravens season that ended before it should have. How would you grade it? B is the runaway early on. 200 votes in. IA 105.7 The Fan is how you vote on the poll. B, 61.3%. C, 18%. D, 15.7%. And A, 5.9%.
We have a huge show today here on this Thursday. We get started our final chat this season with our friend Melissa Kim. Covers the Ravens for us here at The Fan. Joins at 2:30. Our weekly chat with Brian Baldinger, Odyssey NFL Insider at 3. Lucy Burge, IA Hall of Famer. We'll get her best bet. She's from BetQL at 4 o'clock. And Brian Wacker covers the Ravens for the Baltimore Sun. He joins us. He was there at the press conference. We'll get his thoughts at 4:30.
Big Terps game tonight, too.
Oh, yeah.
Big Huge. Terps game.
Huge game.
I'm of two minds on this one. I don't know. I can see it going one of two ways. I feel like this could be an evening of the extremes. Either the biggest win of the Willard era or season on the brink type stuff where they start suffering not just close heartbreaking losses, but run out of the gym losses. Which obviously could teeter this thing in a rough direction.
I'm apprehensive about that.
I don't know.
You're strangely...
I'd like to see it get to like 9 or 10 and I'll take the Terps.
I saw it at 9.5.
Really? Well, I haven't checked checked since early this morning.
Yeah.
And I was still seeing 7.5s and 8s then.
No, it's 7.5. I saw yesterday 9.5.
Coming up next, Justin Tucker. He finished the season on a hot streak. Did not miss a kick for the last 6 games. Are we sold that Justin Tucker is now fine moving forward? That's next here on The Fan.
Well, I think Justin's going to go down as, in my opinion, if not the best kicker of all time, one of the best, and I think he finished.
Ah, can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
College holds a mythic place in American culture. On the new Campus Files podcast, we uncover the scandals you won't hear on the campus tours. Find Campus Files on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's the season strong. We'll have those discussions. But I think, you know, I have every expectation that Justin's going to be a great kicker for us next year and moving forward. We're blessed to have Randy Brown and Chris Horton upstairs and Sam Cook. Awesome coaches, special teams coaches. They'll be a part of the discussion. But you know, the way that Justin finished, he finished strong this year towards the end. Had a little bit of adversity midway through the season. But, you know, I think Justin is a tremendous competitor.
That was Eric DaCosta yesterday talking about Justin Tucker. And since Justin Tucker missed two field goals and an extra point against the Eagles on December 1st, he didn't miss a kick since. Now, you could say, well, some of those points he didn't have wasn't tested at all. Five extra points against Cleveland, five extra points against the Giants. But that six games did not miss a kick. So, are we sold that Justin Tucker is fixed?
I think first, let's because we keep it real here. He didn't hit a little adversity. He was the worst bleeping kicker in the NFL.
Yes.
So, like, we can't let them reframe this, right? Because they decided to do nothing, and it worked out in part because they really didn't need a kicker to do anything, and they started having the punter help him with kickoffs. But, like, he didn't hit a little adversity. There isn't, like, a 15-month span of time where he was the worst kicker in the NFL from 50 yards and beyond, and through the course of the first, I don't know, when was the bye? Week 13, 11, 12 games of this year. He was the worst kicker in the NFL, part of a special teams unit that had the second worst EPA in the NFL. So it wasn't a little bit of adversity. Like, the guy went 2 years without being very good outside of 50, and now he's missing from 40, and he's hooking everything to the left, and he seems to have an issue between his ears, which the head coach came out yesterday, who's also a longtime special teams coach and secondary coach, but more to the point, special teams coach, and said, yeah, a lot of it was between his ears.
Well, and he missed a kick in each of their five losses in the regular season. They all contributed to that, where it was the point differential in those five games was the same amount of points missed by Justin Tucker in that handful of games. I mean, it was a serious, serious issue.
By the way, in his final game of the year, not only did he make every kick in Buffalo in tough conditions, but he also hit a 47-yarder, and he drilled it. So, like, I feel good about him, but I would adjust the way they handle the all. Like, I'd do more than bring in a camp leg. I'd bring in somebody that's legitimate competition.
I don't think it's just some scrap heap guy who you fully intend to waive. Yeah. Like, there should be more ambition in who that person is. That person should be put in positions where he's not just a glorified ball boy for Tucker, and when Tucker doesn't feel like kicking anymore, he comes in and kicks. I think they need to restructure this in a way that at least, again, I know it's a stretch, but somewhat mimics a degree of there's something on the line here, or there needs to be a different level of preparation for this season. And we have the Harbs clip, right? Because I do want to make sure that everybody hears this. I found it both sort of refreshing to some degree, and that there was a degree of candor in that, and that Harbs' answer revealed that Justin Tucker had to go through a lot of introspection. But, like, I also listened to it and found myself thinking, what's to stop this from happening again?
Well, here's the cut.
You know, the thing about the Justin Tucker thing, and we had a great conversation yesterday, and a really long, honest conversation, and it was great, because we talk all the time, and he's really a good guy, and he's a mature guy, and he's a thoughtful guy. You know, maybe we all saw that Justin Tucker is human. You know, maybe we got a chance to see that. It's hard to be a great kicker in this league and be as consistent as he's been, and he ran into that this adversity probably a lot later in his career than most of these guys do. But it's something that probably had to happen in terms of his growth as a player, and even as a performer. You know, it's like golf. It's like making a great driver, a great putt, time and time again. And he went through this thing that was really more here than it was here, because he was kicking so well in practice, and he knew exactly what the format was: stay in balance, follow through, hit it clean. And that was kind of his swing thoughts that he would make in practice. And then taking those to the game under the duress of having those misses when he didn't do that, you know, when he didn't get himself somewhat in the right frame of mind to be able to make that type of contact on the ball that he wanted, to pull himself out of that was going to be the test. And the fact that he went through that, pulled himself out of it, because there's only him, only he can do it. He's the only one in his mind that can do that. If you're a high-level performer, maybe you understand that more than those of us who aren't athletes at that level. And that's the thing I was proud of him for, and I think that's going to serve him well going forward in his career.
So, yes, that is a great response, and it's the kind of thing we were all talking about in real time, but we obviously have never kicked.
Mm-hmm.
But is there not a part of you that heard that thinking, geez, I really wish it was mechanical?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Because Father Time is undefeated. And the margins get tougher each year you come back. And he's probably going to miss some kicks again. And then it's like, yes, he's stronger for going through it. But I also think the fact that he didn't go through it until he's 37, 38 years old.
But isn't like, that the life of a kicker, though, Jason? Where, yes, there are times where it's mechanical, but I feel like that position, more than most, is mental.
Technically, he's 35.
So what, it'll be age 36 season next
year?
Yeah,
he turns 36 in November. Yeah.
When someone is that elite, that so far above anybody else who's ever done anything, I kind of, my junior Ziggy Freud diagnosis is, once that initial crack shows, you're going to have trouble not having a whole bunch of other cracks stem off it. And it not turn into a fissure, because you are no longer impenetrable. You went from Superman, now there's kryptonite out there. Wow, okay, I got it for my first dose of it. And it took me 5 weeks, but I had the 2 weeks off, the bye week, and I found an antidote to it. But in the back of my head, you know that you now know kryptonite exists. Like, you, in your mind, know that there are times when I have succumbed to pressure. And there was a long, ridiculously long period of time where he did not.
And that's where, Tucker, you have to stack those big makes. And I think the first big test that he had following that bye week, he hit a, 51, 52-yard field goal against the Steelers in that second regular season game where all the pressure's on him. That was still a game at that point. The Ravens needed to win that game to keep their hopes of the division alive. And then he was able to not miss the rest of the way. It's about stacking at that point.
I do want to point out, and we pointed this out before when we were talking about his struggles, like, we've seen Chris Boswell was terrible in 2022 and has bounced back the last couple years to be one of the best kickers in football. So we've seen guys, and Boswell's, he's 33. He's going to turn 34 in March. So they're of a similar age. So we've seen guys bounce back from this kind of stuff. But we saw a 2-year trend where he wasn't great.
Well, and there is still a 2-year downward trend.
Yes.
There's two seasons that don't look like
we've got six
the previous 12 or whatever, the previous 11. Like, they're one of these, like a year ago, it was one of these things does not look like the other. Now there's two of those things in consecutive years that don't look like the other. And I don't know that he'll ever, I mean, nobody ever got to where he was. So I don't know that he's getting back there, but I think the middle ground needs to be a little higher.
Coming up next, the season is over. What did Melissa Kim think about the game in Buffalo and the decisions that will be made? As we just had the press conference yesterday, Melissa joins us next here on The Fan. Ravens season ended on Sunday. They had an end-of-season press conference yesterday. Our last Flockdown and Baltimore Game Day Uncensored post-game shows were this past weekend, and the host of said show joins us now. Melissa Kim joins us courtesy of the Window Nation Fan Guest Hotline. And Melissa, thank you as always for your time. We appreciate it. So you've had a couple days to digest all this. What'd you think about what you saw Sunday evening?
I'll stand by this. You can't have three turnovers when the other team has zero and expect to win a game. You can, but it's very, very difficult. So I think that's just the bottom line. You know what I mean? At the end of the day, like, you can nitpick on whatever other little stats of tackles and drop passes or whatever, but at the end of the day, for me, it's the turnovers. You know, you can't turn the ball over. And I don't know if it's ironic, really, but the first presser that we had with John Harbaugh ahead of this game, the first thing he said was that the coaches, they all talked, the one big thing they talked about was protecting the football. And so that part to me, I mean, we heard Eric Acosta say it in the end of season presser, and this is a disappointing season for them, you know? And for me personally, the two keys I had to the game were very simple. Don't beat yourself and run the ball, you know? And in the game against the Steelers, I had one key. Be who you are, don't beat yourself. So I think when you don't do the things that you have done all season and have had success with them, I think it's very difficult to win a game this late in the season and in the postseason.
Melissa, Mark Andrews' future with the Ravens has been talked about a lot this week. It was brought up at the season-ending press conference with John Harbaugh and Eric DaCosta yesterday, given the fact that he's entering the final year of his contract. What do you think happens with Mark Andrews?
I think said, I mean, I would keep Mark Andrews. So I know that we all have short-term memory. Everyone's thinking about his drops right now. The game time two-point conversion drop, that's the only thing that people are thinking about right now. But I think that Mark Andrews has been a really important part of this franchise. I mean, he holds, you know, records for this franchise, has made history for this franchise. And so I think that Mark Andrews, they got to keep him. You know what I mean? I mean, I would absolutely keep him. So, again, I know that he's been the forefront of a lot of criticism lately, which, by the way, like, he is a human being at the end of the day. You know what I mean? I think it's really, like, unfortunate that some of the fan base, which doesn't represent this entire fan base, I don't think, by the way, has kind of gone after him and his girlfriend on social media and stuff like that. Like, that stuff isn't okay. Like, you know what I mean? At the end of the day, these are people, too. But I think it would be a really big shame if Mark Andrews did not remain a Raven after his contract was up.
Yeah, well, expecting more civility, especially the next 4 years. Good luck with that.
Yeah, I know.
Any big takeaways for you from this press conference? Maybe the way they did or didn't talk about, say, a Ronnie Stanley versus a Pat Ricard. What they did or didn't say about Brandon Stevens, Dean Pee's new role. What got your antennas up?
I think that if you have, how do I put this? Have you read between the lines in terms of what was said and not said? And if you've been following this team for a while, you can kind of, I think, infer as to what may or may not happen with some of these guys. I think that Brandon Stevens will probably not be wearing a Ravens uniform in the future. Mm-hmm. I think that Ronnie Stanley is a very big possibility that he can be, obviously. Some other guys on the free agent list, Ardarius Washington, I think we know he will be a Raven again, which I think he absolutely should be, because, I mean, we saw what a healthy season does for him. Some of these other guys, McCary, Ricard, I mean, he put out there on social media that he would like to be a Raven for the rest of his life. I think it would be a damn shame if McCary did not return. I know that he had his ups and downs this season for sure, but there are so few O-linemen that can do what he does.
Absolutely.
In terms of playing every position on the offensive line. I know, again, this was a tough year for him, I think. You know, he had to kind of be thrown into a starting role. But, I mean, you'd have to think about the future, right, in terms of, let's say, there are injuries down the road. You got to think about that, too. Malik Harrison is another one that I've thought a lot about. He's someone that I've gotten to know very well in my time covering this team. And I think that he really had a breakout season this year. I think when Trent Simpson couldn't do what was asked of him completely, I think that Malik was such a great veteran presence that stepped up and was able to do that. And he talked to me about kind of, he's not really a guy that's like, you know, super vocal, like, you know, kind of a rah-rah kind of guy. But he told me this year, he's like, I know I'm entering year five, and I have given advice to younger guys on, you know, how to maintain your body, how to maintain yourself. And I think that he really kind of took on that leadership role and kind of relished in it a little bit later on as he got into the season. So, I mean, I obviously am a big fan of him. But some of these other guys, I mean, Nelson Aguilar, I know he had a little bit of a disappointing season compared to what he was last year. He was Lamar's most reliable target in the wideout room last year. And this year, you know, other guys emerged. Obviously, Zay Flowers, I think, had a great year. Obviously, Rashad Bateman being healthy helped him out a lot and kind of put Nelson in more of a backseat role. But I think there are a lot of decisions to be made. And if you look at the list of guys that are free agents, there's going to be a lot of tough decisions. So, but those are the guys that, for me, I would be like, yo, you got to keep these guys as Ravens.
We're talking to Melissa Kim. It's Inside Access here on the Fan. I do want to go back to the Mark Andrews of it all and take out the people acting like jerks on social media and the death threats and all the nonsense. Just the football part of it and the business part of it. Mark Andrews is going into the last year of his contract. Isaiah Likely is going into the last year of his contract. Charlie Kohler is going into the last year of his contract. Mark Andrews has been a great Raven, but he's also
in the regular season.
Yes, it's also indisputable that he has not been a great Raven in the playoffs. He has never scored a postseason touchdown, and that game Sunday night was the most yards he's ever had in a playoff game with Lamar Jackson at quarterback. He's entering his age 30 season. With all that put together, does that color your opinion at all as to whether or not you think Mark Andrews will be back next year?
It doesn't. I think that he still has a lot more football to play. I think that he has a lot more to prove. I think nothing will fuel fire for a guy like him than what happened this year. I think that probably goes without saying. Yes, some of those stats are surprising, but still, you know, I think that he still has a lot more game left in him. And I know that there are some of these other guys too, Isaiah Likely and Charlie Kolar. I think that it's without a doubt that Isaiah Likely, and it's for sure too this year, Charlie Kolar has definitely proven what they are capable of and their worth for sure. But no, even with all that, I would still think that Mark Andrews should be a Raven after this season.
I'm going to take it a step further. You're in that locker room all the time, and you just said you Ricard put something on social media. You're pretty aware of what these guys' digital footprints are. And I know he's not the most outward-going, forward-facing guy in the world, but he didn't talk. He had two chances to sort of respond to this and say something to the fans. He didn't.
Yes.
He has not put anything on social media, at least that I was aware of time I checked, and that was honestly last night.
He has not.
So I may have missed something. And the general manager refused to talk about the nature of his conversation with him. Does any of that make your spidey senses tingle, maybe even a little bit, that maybe he knows that they're not going to pay him what he thinks he's worth and there probably isn't a big-time extension? So could that be any element to this whatsoever?
I mean, I think it depends on how you look at it, right? I think on one hand, there is an element of protecting your mental health in a lot of this. And am I surprised that he didn't speak to the media in the two chances that he did? I'm a little surprised, you know what I mean, in those senses, because he is someone that, regardless of how the games have gone, wins or losses, he has, you know, generally faced the media and given it, you know, talked to us and told us his thoughts, you know what I mean? And so I am a little surprised, I'm not going to lie to you, that he has not yet talked publicly. But at the same time, like, I think obviously he took it really hard on himself. If you watch any of the Hard Knocks episodes, you know, Lamar like consoled him and he obviously looked upset and all that, which again, I think at the end of the day too, we forget sometimes that these guys are human beings as well. So the fact that Eric DaCosta was pretty mum on it too, the spidey senses not so much. I think maybe in a sense this might be an episode of we're going to kind of let this simmer and settle a little bit before they like release, before anybody says anything publicly speaking. But yeah, he has not posted anything on social media. His girlfriend has not posted anything on social media. There hasn't really been a whole lot, which I think is fair, you know, give them like a week to like recuperate and get back to a normal mental state. Because obviously nobody's more disappointed right now, you have to imagine, than Mark Andrews. You know what I mean? Regardless of what Lamar tells him or whatnot, like, you know, as a human being, if this were you, you would put this on your shoulders too, you know? So I think that you have to think about that part too.
Melissa Kim, always great. Thank you so much for your time. We will talk soon.
Yes, for sure. Lots of
keep on flocking.
And oranges and Korean fried chicken in your in the future.
Don't let them get you down, Melissa. Keep flocking it up.
No.
Flock up.
Yeah. I will.
Thanks, Melissa. Hey. Coming up next, we want to get some Orioles in, and we're going to hit the hot corner. And we had Jim Bowden on the show yesterday, former exec, MLB Network Radio, Athletic. Had some interesting things to say about the Orioles and what they've done this offseason, and essentially since they've become a contender. That's next here on The Fan. So we had Jim Bowden on yesterday, former Reds exec. He was a front office man for, 15-plus years. He's now on MLB Network Radio, also writes for The Athletic. And a year ago, we had him on, and he was raving about the Orioles front office and talking about, I think, Jason, you reminded me, having crab cakes in Baltimore every October.
Going to see you guys for Octobers to come. Mike Elias, why would you want to change anything about the best GM in baseball?
Yes. So yesterday, he started talking about the Orioles and needing to know their window.
Am I crazy?
That's what we're seeing. But no, Ben, that's what we're seeing. Those are just facts. You're just repeating what you're seeing, and I'm seeing the same thing. And the message I would have for Seattle and Baltimore, I mean, look, I sat for decades in front offices, and I was a GM for parts of 17 years. I know when you spend and when you don't spend. When you have a chance to win, you go, because the window's going to close quicker than you think. And as much as everyone would like to think that Rutschman's staying forever and Gunner's staying forever, I mean, the truth of the matter is Boris takes his clients to free agency, and when you get there, you know, Juan Soto tells you what it can look like.
Yeah.
And if you haven't signed him by now, it's going to get harder and harder every single year. And the fact they haven't signed either one of those guys this offseason, that's a really bad sign.
Yeah.
And so now the real possibility of having to trade them in a couple of years all of a sudden is sitting in front of your face like, OMG, it could actually happen. So I am in the same school you are, and the message that I would be given to the Orioles ownership or Seattle's ownership, who, you know, they've got a top four starting rotation in baseball and they don't have the offense to win. I mean, what are you waiting for? Like, this is your window for both of those teams. If you want to win a world championship, it's these next several years where you can do it. And as an owner, this is where you overspend and take your loss. You don't break even. Most owners like to break even, right? They spend what they have and they put it back in the team. What you have to know as an owner is there's certain years where you overspend and you lose 15, 20 million with a whole idea of if we win or when we win, we know at some point we're going to have to completely cut back and make up for that loss. But when you win, you'd be amazed at what the revenue stream does. And all of a sudden, you have more money to do more things. And that's where, to your point, the spreadsheets and the algorithms don't ever tell the story. You need an owner that gets it. And I'm sorry, the guy in Arizona gets it.
Yes.
When Ken Kendrick went out and got Greinke several years ago, he got it. He understood it. When he made the move for Burns this offseason, he gets his window. He understands it's right here, right now. And my feeling from afar is that Baltimore and Seattle aren't seeing that, and they're going to regret it. They're going to regret it. When we get to 2028, they're going to look back and say, boy, we really screwed up our opportunity, didn't we?
We felt like we needed to play that whole thing because there was a lot of meat on that bone, and also because if you're used to hearing Jim Bowden on this show or on other programs here on The Fan, a year ago he was singing the praises of this front office. He was singing a much different tune yesterday.
Yeah, and the way I framed that was, and I even said to him, I'm going to ask you a derivation of a question I've asked you several times before, but does this front office lack ambition? Does it lack the human touch? Does it lack the visceral emotion that is required at times to have a pulse and a sense of urgency to strike, to be more aggressive than the market, to be the most aggressive in the market for a particular player or players who might actually allow you to compete in October? And he took the ball and ran with it. And this is a guy who's been a defender of his. So I'm just saying, more and more people are coming around to where I was a long time ago, which is, if you leave Evie and Siggy and Mikey alone, you're going to get effed in October every year. You're going to get more of the same. You're going to get baseball operations via the algorithm.
Well, him talking about the window, we've talked about this ad nauseum. Adley Rutschman was arbitration eligible for the first time this year. Gunnar Henderson is arbitration eligible next year.
It's starting.
The clock
is happening.
On. It's ticking. You have these next 3 years where you have control of all of these guys. Less than that, if, like Jim Bowden was saying, you have to start considering trading some of them if you're not going to sign them.
That'll be the next GM. He's going to get the S sandwich where he's got to dig out of the hole that Elias left
him. But this is the time where, like Jim was saying, you overspend because you have the money. They haven't spent any money over the past 5 years. I get it. Their payroll is a lot more this year, but it's one-year commitments. There's no real money committed in 2026 or beyond.
We have some breaking news. Mark Andrews has posted on Instagram. Would you like to hear what he said?
Sure.
This is a quote from him on his Instagram. It's impossible to adequately express how I feel. I'm absolutely gutted by what happened on Sunday. I'm devastated for my teammates, my coaches, and Ravens fans. I pour every ounce of my being into playing at the highest level possible because I love my team and the game of football like nothing else. That is why it's taken me until now to collect my thoughts and address this publicly. Even though the shock and disappointment are unlike anything I've felt before, I refuse to let the situation define me. I promise that this adversity will only make me stronger and fuel us as we move forward. I thank everyone who has shown me and our team genuine support these past several days. Despite the negativity, I've seen heartfelt love and encouragement, including from those who have generously donated to the Breakthrough T1D organization, even when the moments seem darkest. Perspective can reveal that there's still a lot of light in this world. I'm now going to do my part to bounce back and contribute to it. Hashtag God bless.
I mean, I wouldn't change a word of it. That's exceptionally well said.
I agree.
I would be exploring.
Yeah.
I would be exploring paying the business Isaiah part Likely of it, now yeah. and seeing what the market is for him. But I think everybody's kind of been waiting for that.
Yeah.
And that's as human as it gets.
Coming up next, we'll talk NFL playoffs. What did Brian Baldinger see in that game Sunday night? Odyssey NFL Insider joins us every week, and that's next here on The Fan.